Since the Mrs. Greensworld show made its debut over 10 years ago, our tagline has always been, we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. This upcoming show with the president and CEO of Tucson Electric Power Company, Dave Hutchins, exemplifies our standing commitment to that intention. This is the first of a two-part series about Prop 127, the energy proposition. Stay with us to hear why TE is opposed to this proposition and some of the reasons why, including their concern about why it's on the ballot as a constitutional amendment. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and we're going down to earth and learn more about Prop 127. Thanks for being with us. And let me set the stage. Our intention with this show is to provide clarity on this proposition as an example for what we, the American voters, should be looking for when it comes to all items on our ballot this November, so that we can vote for our values, from our values, not just from our political party. We are asking that people put aside their political affiliations for just a bit and start by doing some research. Don't believe the hype. Educate yourselves on the facts and then vote. So, Dave, it's always great to have you here. And you know I'm looking forward to hearing your perspective on Prop 127 and why you don't believe it's a good thing for Arizona. I know you're busy. I always thank you for taking the time. And let me just add this. I know you, and I do believe you are a consciously living human being who strives to do the best every day to take steps personally and professionally to preserve the planet. And I don't say that lightly. So I want to set that stage, be very clear for all of my listeners where I stand on Dave Hutchins. So fire away and share with us some of your thoughts as the leader of Tucson's Electric Power Company on Prop 127.
Thanks, Gene. I don't think I've ever had a better introduction than that.
I stand by that, buddy.
I appreciate that. So the thing that we're doing with Prop 127 and why we're opposed to it is there's a lot of reasons why we're opposed to it that I'll get to. But probably one of the biggest ones is the fact that this is not really the right mechanism. When you think about a very complicated topic, and I'll tell you why it's complicated, because you know it's complicated to deliver electricity. But when you think of how complicated this is, and you think about all of the differing opinions, forecasts, et cetera, that are bouncing around out in the media, you'd start to wonder, well, geez, which is right? And I can tell you that based on our forecast, based on RUCO's forecast, based on Tim Steyer's did a great article kind of balancing all those different studies and what it really means. And at the end of the day, it's a bunch of forecasts. And there's only one thing that we know about forecasts, competing or otherwise, is every one of them is going to be wrong. And so
even yours,
even ours. So you get in, it's all based on your assumptions. It's all based on snippets that people might pull out of a forecast. And at the end of the day, those assumptions are key when you think about what you're gonna model for cost reductions in solar, cost reductions in wind, the big one, cost reductions in storage. And you lay that out. If you have different assumptions, you're gonna come to very different conclusions. And to lock into a constitutional mandate, a fixed amount of renewables, just to me on at the highest level sounds crazy.
I want to know, why did they do that? Do you have any sense? Because my basic philosophy is don't mess with the Constitution. Why did they take that route?
You know, I think they took that route because they didn't know that they had other routes. And frankly, the folks who put this proposition forward never came and talked to us. If they would have, they would have said that this is not a problem for TEP, because unbeknownst to them, or actually they may have known, but that we weren't their target audience perhaps. But the current renewable portfolio standard is 15% by 2025. We're going to exceed that next year. We're going to be above that requirement of 2025 next year. We've taken it upon ourselves to double the amount of renewables that's required by the renewable portfolio standard in our state. Our goal is to have 30% by 2030. And that's an ambitious goal, but it's manageable because we know the timing of our assets. We know the timing of you know, renewable credits and all of those things, investment tax credits, production tax credits, all of those pieces. It's a very complicated process that you have to go through to figure out whether you should shut down this plan or you should run this plan or you should put more renewables in, and what are you going to do when you put all these renewables in because you can't store them economically yet. So if they would have asked us and they would have said, oh, you're already at 30 by 30, they probably would have tapped out and said, we're fine. Because the same folks who ran this ballot initiative in Arizona were going to run one in Michigan. And they had the same setup, 15% requirement. They wanted to do 50 by 30. They went and sat down and talked to the two CEOs there in Michigan. And they said, we'll do 25% by 2030. And they said, okay, good enough. We're not going to put this on the ballot as long as you're going to commit to doing that. And we're already doing 30%. So this is not a TEP issue. Because one of the things that we have to make sure is met, one of the biggest needs that's met on our integrated grid is to make sure we don't mess up reliability. And that's the part that people don't really understand, that it's actually very difficult to balance loads and resources to give you instantaneously available energy at the right frequency and voltage that you need. That's a complicated process. And if you put a bunch of variable renewable resources on your system, you got to figure out how to do that. And we're already preparing for that. I know you've probably seen some of the things that we're doing. We're shutting down, the bigger plan for our 30 by 30, we're shutting down a lot of coal. We're shutting down older gas units. We're putting in more flexible, much more efficient natural gas units for the purpose of being able to manage around the variability that solar and wind can bring. We're investing in our distribution system because this is a system that used to only have one-way flow, and now with all these distributed rooftop solar systems on, we've got flow going in both directions almost all the time. So there's a lot of things that happen behind the scenes that we need to make sure we don't lose sight of. And probably the second one besides that reliability is to make sure that we do it affordably. And that's kind of one of the bigger issues associated with having a mandate fixed in a constitution. They don't know our system. They don't know the remaining economic and useful lives of our resources. We do. That's why we've got a plan to get to 30 by 30, and we'll see where we go after that. But, you know, we're not done at 30% at 2030 by any means. So it is really that, the fact that it's the wrong spot. You can't have the conversations between a bunch of smart people who do this stuff for livings and come together at the Arizona Corporation Commission in the integrated resource planning process and say, we want more solar. You say that, we will put it in our integrated resource plan and we'll show you the bill. And if you like it, then we check it off and we'll do it. And that's been our philosophy around 127. Is we'll tell you what this means, we'll tell you how much more it will cost, and at the end of the day, if you're okay with that, then we'll do it. But the problem is the effect that the high rates will have on the people who don't vote. You know, some of the people who may not get out to the polls, our low-income folks. Remember, the energy, you know this, Gina, energy is a regressive cost. It's a bigger percentage of low-income folks' income than it is for higher income. And we can't lose sight of that sort of skewed effect.
And let's go to Tim Steller's column. It was in the Arizona Daily Star on October 7th, and I encourage people that really are trying to do their homework on this to just go. All I did was Google his column and put Tim Steller, Prop 127, it came up. And here's what he had to say, because I read it word for word several times, and I think he really did his homework, and I think he's a very decent guy, so I have a lot of respect for him. And here's what he said. Yep. I've done my best to talk with utility representatives, the opponents, and supporters of the proposition, and other experts. I've gone over the studies, of which there are many, I might add. I've considered the politics, and I don't think passing Prop 127 would mean economic or electric disaster for Arizona, but it probably would cost us more. I've concluded, even though advocates of the initiatives are saying it would not, they say it would actually save us money and add jobs. My thought, probably not. So what's your response to that? And I'd like you to take your time, because I want to know what's it going to cost us, and then over what period of time? Like, our utility bills aren't going to go up $500 next year. How's it going to work?
Yeah, so we think that by the time you get to 2030, you're going to be paying between what we're doing with our 30% renewables by 2030 and this 50% requirement by 2030. We think our modeling would suggest that you're going to pay between $400 and $500 more per year out in 2030 than you would under our existing plan. And that's because it's on a very fixed process. Now, a requirement that we have to meet. Every year we've got to ratchet it up, and it doesn't take into account that, hey, maybe there's some plants that last a little bit beyond 2030, but now we have to shut them down early, and we have to recover all those costs from our customers.
Okay.
So that's a big piece. But the study that they quote, which is an NRDC study, and these folks are no lightweights. They do good studies. I wouldn't say that, they're just obviously doing something that they don't understand. But the part that they're missing is, in that study, they don't include any storage or any cost of retiring existing generation. And those are two huge, huge misses on that forecast. I'm sure that they've probably got, ambitious renewable energy cost, reductions. They've probably got some other, assumptions. But the problem is, we don't have everybody sitting in a room somewhere up in Phoenix at the Corporation Commission or somewhere else that can all go and get all their brain trust together and say, let's compare these forecasts and see how this really works. Because they can't do it to the level of detail that we can from an individual utilities perspective. So that's and I got to say, Tim Steyer did a very good job comparing and contrasting those studies. They're only as good as their assumptions.
And he slammed the one that was funded by APS, and I gave him 5 stars for that, because it's like, that puts a different spin on it. It really does.
Well,
but RUCO did a study, and RUCO said, look, bam, here's what's going to happen.
And RUCO's study was for TEP was almost right on top of ours.
Yes.
So that shows the credibility of what we're doing. We're not trying to hide the ball here anywhere. We're trying to make sure that we don't lose that affordability. That's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to get there as fast as we can with the ambitious targets that we have. And I can commit to you that we'll go as fast as our customers can afford. And we'll go faster if things get cheaper. And that's just part of us running a business whose, sole purpose is to create clean, affordable, reliable energy for our communities. That's what they want. That's what we're here to provide. So, one thing related to the initiative itself, which I got to bring this up, because I know you're a big climate advocate. And unfortunately, this is not a climate initiative. I wish it was. I wish it was more around clean energy or reducing greenhouse gases, but it's more about increasing a specific part of your resource portfolio and not looking at the bigger, broader picture of reducing greenhouse gases. What's glaringly omitted is nuclear energy, which is a huge, huge non-greenhouse gas emitting resource for the state of Arizona. We don't have any, but from a state perspective, hydro, another one I know that's near and dear to your heart, energy efficiency.
Right.
So, I mean, the first thing you do is not use a kilowatt hour.
Right.
And then you figure out, when you do have to use them, how you produce them. And we're missing a couple, gigantic topics in this initiative. So that's my beef on this. And that's how, when we were drawing up our 30 by 30, it wasn't about hitting 30% renewables. It's what does that do from a greenhouse gas emissions reduction perspective? And when we looked at that, this might surprise people as well. is the Clean Power Plan came out years ago. It's sitting on a shelf now, and a new replacement one is there. But our current plan would meet that Clean Power Plan requirements for greenhouse gas reductions. We will be reducing our greenhouse gas. It just so happens it's almost the exact same percentage, but right around 30% greenhouse gas reductions by the time you get to 2030. So that's what we're focused on. So and that's not including energy efficiency, I might add, too, which it would be higher if you did.
And it's great to hear you say, and I know that you've done this already, if you can beat those numbers, you will. You're not going to say, oh, we're almost there, so let's stop and go have a margarita. Let's just keep going. Yeah. It's like, come on. Let's keep going.
And that's another part people don't understand, that probably the absolute best investment that you can make from a utility perspective is in renewable energy. And if it makes economic sense, and if the bill impact works for the customers, you absolutely would be doing more of it.
You know, the question that I have a lot of questions about it, because when it's something to write something in a mandate, and this mandate is not very complicated. I mean, I read it, and it says, yeah, do this, do this, do this. I started thinking about, is it even doable? I mean, is it doable to build that much renewable energy by the year 2030 to get to 50%, not just for you, but for APS and other utility companies? Is that a number that can be reached? And if it is, at what cost it's going to be?
Well, you can get there. It's the at what cost, which is an issue. Now, whether or not you can get there and hit all the individual annual targets, et cetera, you can bank some of the credits, and you know, if you get ahead of the curve, but if you get behind, then it might be tough to catch up. But for us, and this is a big number. For us, we estimate the difference in investments that have to be made in renewable energy, including storage, would be $2 billion of additional investments that we would have to make for Tucson Electric Power. So that's a billions with a B. That's a big chunk of change.
Yeah.
And you know, we have that's a lot. I guess I didn't really do the math before this. So I'm going to do it on the fly. But you know, that's $2 billion for, you know, 400,000 customers. What is that? $5,000 a customer?
Yeah, we don't even. Maybe I'll be dead by then. It's 2030. I don't want to be, but it's like, whoa, those are big numbers. But let's take it in another direction. What is the alternative approach? What is TEP doing to expand at a rapid, reasonable pace that allows for this? What are you doing?
So it all has to do with timing, and it all has to do with keeping your ear to the ground and finding out where some of these new technologies are going. If storage does get cheap, I mean, we assume it's, you know, drops to like a quarter of the cost it is today, and it still gets to that $2 billion number. But if it gets cheap, if you have big improvements in the ability to store power, whether it's battery or otherwise, that is a big game changer, because then it allows the solar, when you have excess solar in the middle of the day and you don't need it, you can basically store it and use it for the evening peak or even for the following morning peak. That's a big deal. Now that doesn't mean you won't need some of the more nimble and flexible generation, natural gas generation facilities that we're putting in now, but you would need less of them, and you can use more of that renewable energy. I mean, solar is cheap, but that is just from an energy perspective. And that's where, and so the other part of solar being cheap, and that is thrown around quite a bit, that solar is cheap. And I would agree. We signed a PPA for 100 megawatts of solar, and it's actually paired with a 30 megawatt battery, which is a big battery. But the solar by itself is under 3 cents a kilowatt hour. And so people will say, oh, geez, 3 cents a kilowatt hour. Wow, that's really super cheap. They take that and extrapolate it. Well, that must be how cheap the stuff is on your roof is. And rooftop solar, individual DG power plants are expensive. We end up, and this is after we got a lot of grief for trying to tell people the simple fact that it costs 3 to 4 times more to put solar on your roof than to do it at scale. on a larger scale. And we get grief for saying that, like we're anti-solar, which is absolutely not the case. We just know in a world of finite resources, and money happens to be one of those, and with a main driver of us maintaining affordability for our customers, and you're trying to reduce greenhouse gases, why on earth would you pay 3 to 4 times as much per kilowatt hour for rooftop solar than what you could for utility-sized or community-scale solar? So that to me, we just get endless grief about that because people don't understand what we're trying to do. We're trying to do as much as we can for your dollar. That's our sole goal.
And lots of people really can't afford solar. And I have to put that in because I get dinged, believe me, from some of my friends because I do arm myself with facts and say it's not an option for hundreds of thousands of people in Tucson alone. Let's be honest.
Yeah, and it's complicated, right? Our rate structure is complicated. You know, people say, well, if you get 3 cents solar, why are you charging me, 10, 11 cents a kilowatt hour? Because the rest is all of the distribution, all the transmission, all the infrastructure that we have, all the power plants that we have that manage that voltage and the frequency, all of that stuff adds up to the other 8 cents, 7, 8 cents that we charge our customers. It's when you look at solar and or wind, they're both cheap. They're both in that kind of 3 cent neighborhood. If you look at that compared to natural gas on an energy only basis, we have these combined cycle plants that we have purchased recently, and that's in us prepping for shutdowns of some of the coal plants. And you're looking at, in today's gas prices, getting energy from those plants for under 2 cents a kilowatt hour.
Wow.
Wow. So even because that's what you're displacing. When solar comes on and you don't need it, or wind comes on when you don't need it, you back down the top of your stack, and the top of your dispatch stack is that combined cycle generation that's sitting there spitting out, 2 cent power. So you're not really saving money. What you're doing is saving, carbon emissions. That's what you're doing.
And then there's, talk about a complex carbohydrate. We talked about energy storage. I've had guests from your team on the show. I've interviewed national people. Hopefully the research on that will accelerate and there'll be easier answers. I mean, it's getting better, but storing energy from the sun still poses quite a big and very expensive challenge.
Yep.
Dare we foray into the nuclear question? It's not so much of a Tucson issue, but I say all the time we're a global community. It's a statewide issue, and talk about a very complex one. I encourage everyone read Tim Steller's column, because he got me to understand it in one newspaper column about why it is so complex and why it might cause the plant to close, the Palo Verde nuclear plant. So do you want to foray into that arena, Mr.
I'll foray into it. I don't shy away from giving opinions.
No, and I know you get it. I mean,
yeah,
you get it.
As a little background, I used to run a nuclear power plant aboard of a long steel tube we call submarines. So I'm familiar with the technology and what's required to run it. But so it would be a travesty, an absolute travesty, if whatever we do here shuts down the Palo Verde nuclear generation station. That is a huge, 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 huge portion of the carbon-free energy that's produced not only in this state but in this country. If we do things that knock out a big source of dispatchable, meaning controllable, energy that is carbon-free, we will have made a grave error. So that's what I will say about that, because I can't comment, because it's not
right,
we don't own a portion of it. So I can't tell you whose study's wrong, whose study's right. But I'll tell you what, if that happened, and if there's any way that this proposition, by its passage, reduced the either economic viability or just flat out the compliance portion of this 127 reduces the ability to run that nuclear power plant full out to get all the energy, all that carbon-free energy we can, oh boy, we will all look in the mirror and say, what have we done? What an unintended consequence.
Yeah, it's really scary. And so, you know, my last question is to you, my friend, and I say that I stand by that. You are my friend. And I know you care as a father, as a husband, as a citizen of Tucson. But you sit in a position of power and impact when it comes to moving the green needle forward, as I like to say. If you were the Wizard of Oz, if you were running the show, not behind the curtain, but right out in front, what would you be asking utility companies to do to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and how quickly? Do you feel you're on the most conscious path at TEP to get us there?
Yes. If short answer to that is yes. If I didn't, I'd change the path. Because we are on the most ambitious path that we can, the most responsible path that we can be on, and still maintain the affordability and reliability for our customers. And any time that we see a chance, we will be stepping on the gas pedal to speed that up. But we have to have our eyes out that front windshield. We can't put the sun visor up and start driving because we created some, you know, new proposition that requires us to do X, Y, or Z. We got to still be able to see out that windshield, see which way the road is going, and be able to adapt. And so you don't want to give that flexibility away. And I got to tell you, I sit in rooms with all the CEOs from across all the investor-owned utilities. We get together once a quarter. We talk about this stuff. And there isn't a single CEO in that room that isn't trying to figure out how to press the gas pedal on renewables, integrating them, keeping it affordable, keeping it reliable as fast as they can. There's not a CEO in there that's dragging their feet. And for some reason, and this is just, I think, the political environment that we're in, there's just this huge lack of trust between people and anything that they don't understand. And when you don't understand, or you think that, you know, corporations or companies have some sort of, you know, ulterior motive, we don't. There's no such thing as a company. People always say, oh, you know, TEP this, and I said, who are you talking about? I'm a CEO there. That's not how we operate. It's a bunch of people just like you that are sitting around a table trying to figure out what we can do for our customers, what we can do to run our business the best way that we can. There's no magical corporation sitting around. It's just a bunch of us people. And that's where people kind of, I don't know where that distrust has just gotten so bad lately against everything. Everything has just been politicized, right?
I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, people coming at me and saying I'm just a spokesperson for TEP, and it's very offensive to me because I think...
You're a spokesperson for us?
10 years. There's news. I'm going to be showing up on the payroll soon. But to me, it's like that attacks my integrity, and I have the ability to think and not have people tell me what to think. So, in closing, what an up note that you left us on, but what our whole commitment as a team, as a movement, as a respected voice in this community, my final plea is to ask people, educate yourself. Take off the blue hat or the red hat, because that's not what this is about. This is about what you think. And you cannot know what you think unless you get down in the weeds, read, make sure you know who did the studies that you're reading. And my last thing is fast forward on the commercials. Don't listen. Don't make your decision based on an ad on TV. Get some facts. Go to the TEP website. Go to the RUCO website. Yeah. Look at what people are saying and arm yourself with facts. And when people ask me what to do, that's what I tell them. I'm not going to tell you how to vote. You have to make up your own mind. And here's the last thing I'm going to say. Trust me when I say that almost every single thing on the ballot in Arizona this coming up election will have an impact on our lives, whether we vote for it or against it, or vote or don't vote. It will impact our lives. So get up, get on your feet, get up and make it happen. I think we should write a song about that. Well, that's right. Yeah. There already is one. But Hutch, thanks. It's always great spending time with you. I thank you for your integrity, for your time, and for your information.
My pleasure, Jean.
Thanks. Everybody, here's the word, vote. Thanks.